Bristol Community FM 93.2.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show Friday Drive Time with Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. London's burning, but why did it take police from Saturday until Tuesday evening to get the numbers out on the streets to stop the looting? Plus, recriminations about the Stokescroft disturbances rumble on. Young man Joe Foster will be in court soon accused of making a petrol bomb. We talked to St Paul's residents Alex Hutchings and Will Stinton about what happened in Easter. Are there lessons the police and the public should have learnt? But first, as Bristol faces two huge new nuclear power stations on our doorstep, upwind indeed, The Sun and other papers are going after Lib Dem Energy Secretary Chris Huhne, alleging that he got his wife to take points on her driving licence more than a decade ago. But is the Murdoch press just after him because he's got doubts about new nuclear power? Well, Mike Birkin from Friends of the Earth is here to bring us up to date with government plans to make it much easier to get permission to build nuclear power stations. Hi, Mike. Welcome
Hello,
to Drive
Tony.
Time. Yeah, so what are these changes? This is the first thing I'm going to ask you about. Changes to the planning system to make it easier to build a nuclear power station. Well, I'm not going to, but I can think of a couple of companies that might do that near us.
Yeah, that's right. And the changes have been working through. I mean, it was actually an act introduced by the previous government, 2008 Planning Act. It has been law for some time. But part of it was that there had to be a set of government policy statements called national policy statements, which laid out what kind of infrastructure was going to be built where. This applies to major infrastructure projects, big power stations, pipelines, electricity pylon, transmission lines, that kind of thing. And they were finally adopted by Parliament just a few weeks ago, sort of middle of July. So now it's part of the legislative system that we have this statement in law. It says there are 8 sites identified for nuclear power stations around England and Wales, and that removes the local democratic element from the debate. If you get one, if you live in near Hinkley Point in Somerset or near Oldbury, you don't have any right anymore to say as a resident of those areas that you don't think that those sites are suitable for nuclear power stations, because the government has already told you that it is.
So it can be quite awkward to build an extension on the back of your house, but if you want to build a nuclear power station, it's getting a lot easier.
It is, yes.
So are right. These the ultimate question, though, of course, are these two power stations actually going to happen?
Well, it's a tale of two different operators now. What's happened that ironically, the government here says this is up to the private sector to deliver energy investment. What we have is a company largely owned by the French government wanting to build one in Somerset, and a company which did include the German state electricity provider wanted to build one in Gloucestershire. Now, what's happened is that the German consortium that wants to build the Oldbury station, quite a lot of their big backers and the companies themselves are pulling away from nuclear. In the wake of the Fukushima disaster, Germany as a nation has gone away from nuclear. They're saying they're going to close all existing nuclear power stations as soon as they can. They're not going to order anymore, and they're going for a non-nuclear future. So it's rather ironic that the only sort of German investment that might come forward into new nuclear power stations is going to be here in Britain. But actually, German big investors are showing signs of wanting to pull out from investing in nuclear altogether. They say it's too risky. So although the government might be trying to hand them the site on the plate and say, here you are, you can build a new nuclear power station at Oldbury, the industry there isn't interested in building it.
Now, I noticed at the Hinkley site near Bridgewater, they had a whole load of inspectors down this week to have a good old look around the site. Now, who were they and what was that about?
Well, it's news to me, actually, who those inspectors were.
It's called the Nuclear Inspectorate.
The Nuclear Inspectorate. Well, it's a very complicated process because to get a nuclear power station built, you don't only need the planning permission for the site, which the government has made a lot easier, but you also need to get the design of the reactor licensed by a separate arm of government, and then of course you need to put the finance in place for it. So it isn't a done deal just because development is going ahead at Hinkley Point, and a local planning permission was given only last month that allows the developer, EDF, the French electricity national supplier, to clear the site. So they're creating they now have the potential to create complete destruction of that site and level it in anticipation of a nuclear power station they don't actually yet have permission for.
Martin, can I bring you in on this? Because it seems we've been talking about all these various things not being invested in, like buses and trains and old people's care. How come there seems to be money for building these massive nuclear power stations, which have a tremendous economic overhang? That is to say, once they even stop working, whoever's built them then has to look after them for hundreds, if not thousands or tens of thousands of years.
Well, you've just hit the nail on the head there. And the fact there may not be money to build these nuclear power stations, and that may very well what happens, is that they won't be built because there's no money. The fact of the matter is that they do require subsidy, so this fantasy that they don't require subsidy has been gradually exposed for what it is. And at a certain point, we have to decide whether we want to waste any money on nuclear power stations. And I think probably the answer is no, isn't it?
Is it?
It is for
but,
me.
I mean, certainly the apparent appearance is that they're pushing ahead with this. At least they're having a go.
The reason why the Japanese develop nuclear power is because they lack oil, and they have a strategic planning attitude in Japan where they plan ahead. They don't have 5-year plans, they have 15-year plans. So they built these nuclear power stations because they felt that are vulnerable, because they don't have any oil, they haven't got any energy resources of their own. They're wondering that the Chinese might cut them off, or the Americans might try, or that somebody might rise the price or whatever. But of course, the price has actually turned out to be incalculable in Japan. Some of the things I've been reading suggest that they may have to actually evacuate the whole Tokyo area of 30 million people. That's very expensive, isn't it? Super expensive.
Okay, so if you had to give a percentage chance, this is the crazy situation where nobody really seems to know whether these things are going to be built or not. But do you think that there is any way of knowing? And roughly, do we need to be worried about these things? And also, at the end of the day, Mike, surely we need to get our nuclear power. We need to get our power from somewhere. So why not nuclear?
Well, I think the worst possible outcome...
That was about five questions in one.
Yeah. I'm going to take one of them. I think about one of the worst... also, in the last week, the nail has been driven into the coffin of a plant up at Sellafield in Cumbria, which was supposed to reprocess nuclear fuel again, actually... partly because of dependence on contracts with Japan. That plant has now been is going to be mothballed. Mothballs is a kind of polite way to put it, because it's so intensely radioactive it's got to be sort of shut off for probably hundreds of years, and it will be an enormously expensive and complicated and dangerous operation ever to make that area safe again. So you had the worst case scenario there, really, where despite a lot of good, sound economic and policy evidence that they should never have built that plant in the first place, they did, they started it up, it never worked properly, it never made any money, and now they've got an enormous expensive radioactive legacy of the worst possible kind to look after. So that's really what we must avoid. And there is a danger that these new nuclear sites could go that way, because these new reactor designs do burn up fuel much more intensively. They will create radioactive hulks much more difficult to get rid of or to make safe than the older generation of nuclear stations. So, you know, we have them on Severnside at Barclay, Aldbury, and then down at Hinkley Point, we have these old nuclear power stations, which are not that easy to deal with, but those sites could be returned to green fields within a matter of decades or 100 years or so. Not so these new reactor designs.
I mean, really, aren't you as friends of the earth? I mean, you know, we think of you as sort of looking after the environment, but actually this is surely a technology which is being perfected slowly. I mean, obviously, we've had problems in Japan with this Fukushima, and isn't it largely an emotional reaction that people are now backing away from nuclear because they see that particular disaster. We don't have tsunamis and things like that in the Bristol Channel, do we?
I think it's just part of the ongoing learning experience about nuclear power that actually it never delivers what it's supposed to. It's always more difficult. It's always more expensive. There are always unforeseen problems with the safety case or the economics or whatever. And, you know, the record of the industry in Britain is actually not good. We had an experimental reactor was built right up on the far north coast of Scotland, as far away from people as it possibly could be, and that site has become horrendously contaminated. You know, when it thinks it's out of the public eye and the industry can sort of behave as it wants to, they just chuck radioactive stuff down a hole. So it's never been an industry that really has lived up to the promise that it sweet talks government with about being well regulated, well run, economic, safe, and all these sorts of things. Experience over, you know, more than 50 years now tells us that is actually a bunch of untruths about
so
the nuclear industry.
Apart from the French, are the British the only country that's actually considering this? Are we a bit of a soft touch when the nuclear industry gets its elbow and its muscle in there?
No, I believe there are nuclear reactors underway or being talked about in quite a number of countries around the world, but you know, none of them actually kind of, again, you know, the story on the ground is that none of them are being delivered with the speed or to the cost that they were supposed to be. So I guess it's, you know, it in my case it is a sort of a bit of an emotional response, because I remember fighting against nuclear power stations, you know, in sort of 30 years ago and never trusting the industry then. But I think it's also it's a rational case based on experience, and the danger really is that we're just charging up a blind alley. The government is trying to rig the system. There's going to be a new energy bill this coming up, starting being introduced this autumn, energy market reform, and it's basically the government is going to choose how it intervenes in the electricity market to encourage investors where they put their money. And our fear is that they're going to go charging up the nuclear blind alley and do everything they can to encourage investors to put money in nuclear, and then it ain't going to deliver.
Well, Mike from Friends of the Earth there is saying, you know, the government's rigging the market, Martin. How are they able, the nuclear industry, to rig the market, to get the government to do what they want, to actually rig the market to favour nuclear?
Because vested interests become vested, and once you've spent a lot of money on nuclear power, for example, the French have invested huge amounts of money in nuclear power, it's path dependency, what we were talking about the railways earlier, the Stephenson gauge as opposed to the Brunel gauge. Once you've gone down the road to a QWERTY keyboard or the wrong gauge, or you've invested in nuclear power, there's no way back. You've then got to get the money back by selling the stuff on. It's like becoming addicted to heroin. You can't afford to buy it anymore, so you've got to sell it to somebody else. Pyramid selling. And at a certain point, we've just got to draw the line under it and say this stuff is uneconomic, which it's always been the case. But of course, it's been linked to the production of nuclear weapons, which of course is a linkage which the West loves to point out in relation to Iran, but of course conveniently forgets in relation to its own nuclear industry.
Okay, what about there's a blockade, I believe, taking place at Hinkley Power Station in October. Do you know anything about that, Mike?
All I know is that a number of organisations have formed an alliance, and they're calling for a non-violent blockade of the site first weekend in October.
Now, is that because this is the more likely of the two, rather than Old Bree?
Oh, yes. Hinkley is the front runner. All the nuclear sites that are under discussion around the UK coast, Hinkley is the one that's most is furthest advanced, and EDF may be putting in their formal planning permission by the end of this year.
I mean, the thing that shocked me about Oldbury is just how massive it is, with these massive cooling towers. Even though it's right next to the River Severn, it's still got to have all these massive cooling towers. You'll be able to see it for, you know, sort of tens of miles all around, and it will completely change the character of the Severn estuary in that
area. Well, I think both those nuclear stations are on a scale that we haven't yet seen. So, you know, you may see Hinkley is a site where there are already two nuclear reactors, but my understanding is that the new proposal, and just look at the size of the area that they are clearing to build it, is going to be much, much larger in scale. And as you say, at Oldbury, we're not only talking about a bigger building, but we're talking about, you know, having to cool it with, because its energy intensity is much greater, the amount of water they can get from the lagoon that they built in the 50s or wherever to cool the the old power stations isn't sufficient, so they've got to have the cooling towers as well. It's another reason why its economics are actually quite marginal, and maybe that site is one that is we're less likely to see any development on.
Okay, Martin, what about this? Let's have your bet. Is this going to happen or not, the Hinkley Power Station?
I think not. I think that the money involved is too much, and ultimately the opposition, especially after Fukushima, you see the German government, the German population just decided that they're not having nuclear power. And it does take emotional things like Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, Fukushima, and that raises the costs enormously. And at that point, basically, you have to throw in the towel, and I think they will throw in the towel sooner or later.
Okay, Mike, tell us, what do you get from membership of Friends of the Earth? You get a newsletter, or you get something through the post, or junk mail, or what?
To save the Earth.
Apart from saving the Earth, yeah.
You can join Friends of the Earth as a national supporter, around about 30, 35 quid a year. For that, you get a newsletter, you get regular supporter bulletins, or whatever you choose to sign up to, really. Or you can join the Bristol Branch, which is an autonomous group. We sort of, obviously, we're connected with Friends of the Earth nationally, but the Bristol local group has its own funds, its own activities, and that's a cheaper deal. It's sort of £5-10 a year, depending on whether you're waged or not. And for that, again, you get regular supporter bulletins, you get a newsletter, you get invited to the meetings and stuff that we organise, and you get connected with what's happening in Bristol, which is much more than what we've just talked about this evening.
Okay, Mike, thanks very much. And after this, we have some music now, and after that we'll be talking about Stokescroft back in Easter, and also discussing some of the causes behind the rioting earlier this week.
Of clothes, and I want loads of diamonds. I heard people die while they're trying to find them. And I'll take my clothes off, and it will be shameless, cause everyone knows that's how you get famous. I'll look at the sun, and I'll look in the mirror. I'm on the right track, yeah, I'm on to a winner. It's about film stars and less about mothers. It's all about fast cars and cussing each other. But it doesn't matter, cause I'm packing plastic, and that's what makes my life so, so fantastic. And I am a weapon of massive consumption, and it's not my fault, it's how I'm programmed to function. I look at the sun and I look in the mirror. I'm on the right track, yeah, we're on to a winner.
That's The Fear from Lily Allen. What a pity that Lily stopped making singles. I used to look forward to every few months another interesting little bit of song from her. Now, recriminations about the Stokescroft disturbances are rumbling on. Tesco's is fortified but still open, and a young man, Joe Foster's, due in court soon, accused of making a petrol bomb. Well, it may seem obvious, but why is this case so important, Martin, this particular one with from back at Easter time?
Because it looks as if Joe Foster didn't make a petrol bomb, and the existence of a petrol bomb was the reason why Avon and Somerset police called in three outside riot squads from South Wales, Wiltshire and Devon, which then ran amok in Stokescroft, causing all kinds of injuries to local residents.
Well, we shouldn't second guess the results of that particular court case, but certainly a lot does hinge on it, doesn't it?
It does, because what seems to be happening, there must have been pre-planning by the police to bring in three outside out-of-town riot squads. I want to see a timeline of when they thought there was a petrol bomb, whether there was a petrol bomb, and why they brought in three riot squads to deal with it, which I think is an inappropriate response anyway. And on the Bristol City Council website, there is a petition, an e-petition, for a full inquiry into what happened on that day, and I think we definitely need one.
Okay, I'd also like to introduce Alex Hutchings. Alex, you live on Brigstock Road in St Paul's. Welcome to Drive Time.
Thank you very much.
Now, can you tell us your experiences of the Easter disturbances, Alex? Because I know you came along to one of the public meetings. I met you there. So what were your thoughts about the sort of, what happened that evening, on those two evenings, and why it happened?
Well, I was around on both of those evenings. As you said, I live in the area. I live quite close by. I came home about 10 o'clock on the first occasion, and there was obviously something sort of significant happening in the Stokescroft area. I turned off City Road into City Road, and there were sort of police vans and stuff around, and there was obviously atmosphere about. So to the extent that I went home, parked up, and went up to have a look and see what was going on. And by that time, they'd obviously been into the squat earlier on in the evening, and things had been going on for some time. But it was still kind of there was an awful lot of people on the street. There were lots and lots of local residents, people that I've known from the time that I've lived in that area, going back a long way. That a lot of people were out on the street and were very kind of distressed and upset and annoyed. Excuse me, at what appeared to be taking place and the police.
To what extent do you think people were there just to watch, and to what extent were they wanting to intervene?
Well, I'll give you one example, right? I'm like a person of no consequence whatsoever, right? But the only small thing I would say is I've lived in that area for a long time. I do know a few people, and when it was obvious that there was a situation getting out of hand and that there was a potential for trouble and violence, I looked around and made an attempt to speak to a relatively senior on the ground police officer, and the bloke totally disrespected me. He wouldn't give me a minute. They were intent on a pattern of things.
Well, surely now, he's in the middle of he's doing his job. I mean, he can't sort of just hold that for a minute and have a chat with you, Alex.
Well, I'm not suggesting he just hold that and have a chat with me. This was before trouble had kicked off. This was before any real violence had kicked off. And at that stage, there was still the potential to possibly avoid the confrontation that took place. And yeah, he's in his capacity of doing his job, but also you've got to be, if you come into an area, you've got to take advantage of whatever resources are available to you in the area. And all I'm trying to suggest is that the attitude of the police from that night, this out of town commander, and he wasn't just disrespectful, he was totally rude. He was, and it was like, the chances are that, like you say, Tony, the chances are that there was absolutely nothing, no chance or no difference that I could have made whatsoever. But he didn't even give me 2 minutes just to explore the possibility of, are there any local people from the local community here who may be able to help to defuse this situation? He didn't want to know.
Yeah, I think this is what's worrying me particularly about this sequence of events, is that to bring three out-of-town riot squads in implies pre-planning. And that's why we need an inquiry. We need to see a timeline. When was it that the so-called petrol bomb was identified by the police? How did they identify it? Was it, for example, Tesco's security that phoned in? That's what we understand from the grapevine. And we need to see a proper timeline, because it looks to me as if there was an attempt to provoke a riot by the kind of tactics that the police adopted. And if we think about what's happened in the last week, how irresponsible is it of Avon and Somerset police to bring in three out-of-town riot squads and provoke a riot right on the edge of St Paul's?
But Martin, the trouble is, of course, that there aren't enough riot-trained police and able instantly to be able to be put into those riot vans, from within Avon and Somerset itself.
Let me just put this to you. Number one, we're not even clear that there was a petrol bomb, and Joe Foster is to go to court as somebody with learning difficulties and alcohol problems, I understand, age 20, and it looks as if he's being set up for this petrol bomb rap.
Martin, we can't say that until we've had the results.
No, we're all waiting for the court appearance. If there was a petrol bomb, it's going to be very difficult for them to link him to it, because he certainly was not in the squat at the time. So they've got to have fingerprint evidence or something similar. If they're just trying to make him a fall guy, we're going to be very angry about that. And if he walks, of course, the police's case for bringing in out-of-town riot squads starts to disintegrate. Now, what I suspect may have happened here, my copper's instinct, if you like, is that senior people in Avon and Somerset Police, possibly the Colin Port, the chief inspector, I've been playing golf with Tesco's bosses, and they were putting pressure on for something to be done about the peaceful protests against Tesco's. Something was done.
Yes, but there's no reason why the Chief Constable shouldn't be playing golf with someone from Tesco's.
Well, listen, this is just a suspicion. If Joe Foster walks, as I suspect he will, from this forthcoming trial, then the questions have to be asked. What were the police doing on the day? Now, in any case, if there was a petrol bomb, I would suggest that the way to deal with that is to send down a small squad of people.
Right. They handled it and
knock on the door and say, "Excuse me, we're coming in here. We're looking." Turning up with three riot squads was absolutely provocative. And those three riot squads, as Alex will know, then ran amok, and there's going to be massive criminal compensation claims against those police officers.
It was 8:30 on a Thursday evening on a hot day just before a bank holiday in Stokes Croft, and it was just a ridiculous time to send in, you know, if there was the potential of danger for a petrol bomb. Again, you know, I've spoken to police officers in the area at the meeting and various things, and who are adamant that there was a petrol bomb and it was a credible threat. But even if it was there, the fact is that, you know, that it was obvious that there was going to be trouble. But, you know, I mean, let's be clear about this, and that, you know, it's not clear yet who's going to benefit from these riots that have been taking place, whether it was in Stokes Croft or Hackney or whatever. But one thing's for sure, numbers to the police are now no longer going to be cut, and so we've got to ask some questions about these things.
Well, actually, I think you'll find that the Home Secretary is saying that actually the police cuts are going to continue.
Yeah, he's saying
and there seems to be a bit of a battle going on between David Cameron and Theresa May and the Association of Chief Police Officers over responsibility for, you know, why was it that not enough police were around in Tottenham, for example, on Saturday night?
I'd like to answer that. I'll tell you why they weren't in Tottenham. They weren't in Tottenham, and they weren't in Hackney, and they weren't in the other parts of London, like Croydon, for example, because on the first night they were too busy protecting places like Westminster, Knightsbridge, Oxford Circus, Chelsea, and where the wealthy live, and they didn't have enough police to protect the wealthy, make sure the wealthy stayed safe and protect the poorer areas as well, and that's why they weren't there. By the time they doubled the numbers up, they had enough to put them in a few of the poorer areas as well. And the only in between places that caught it were places like Clapham and Ealing, which are sort of middle class areas, and they weren't quite wealthy enough for them to protect, but they stood out because they didn't quite fit in with the pattern of the working class areas where the people were being bounced back into.
Yeah, we can go on to the riots we've had this week in a minute. I just don't want to lose this point. If there was a petrol bomb in Telegraph Heights, then if I was a police officer, I wouldn't wait half a day to bring in three extra riot squads to deal with it. If I'd got information that there was a petrol bomb in Telegraph Heights, I'd be down there quick sharp with a small team.
They must have waited,
because to bring guys from Cardiff takes at least an hour, doesn't it? And why wait an hour to bring in three riot squads to deal with it?
I think it was either that. They obviously made a massive error of judgment, and I think either they needed to have done that, or alternatively, they needed, because it was never definite as to what the situation was, they needed to put a dozen or even two dozen plainclothes people on the spot to monitor the situation and have a team ready to move very swiftly if it changed.
Well, what I suspect may have happened here, because we know for a fact that local beat officers spoke to the protesters outside Tesco's and said, "We are being leaned on to lean on you."
Yeah.
Two days before.
Yeah.
we're not going to do that, guys, but something is going to happen, and then something did.
Yeah.
Now, I think we're not talking about the police in general. We're talking about particular officers making particular decisions. Have they colluded with Tesco's? Because that's the question in my mind, and that's why we need an investigation to find out whether there was collusion between senior officers in Avon and Somerset Police and Tesco's management. Now, I'm not saying that they did collude, but it's a suspicion in our minds. Just like when you see somebody breaking a window, you think maybe they're going to loot. These are just coppers' suspicions. And if Joe Foster walks, as I think he will, from this trial, then the questions will then be raised.
We'll have to wait to see for the results of that case, Martin.
That's why we have courts and juries, isn't it? So the police don't just judge their own case.
Now, Alex, what are your thoughts about the actual sparking of these present riots with this the killing of Mark Duggan? Certainly there's a mistrust between the ethnic minority community in Tottenham and the police. They feel rather nervous, if anything happens, about actually phoning the police because they don't necessarily feel they trust them. Do you think we've got a similar situation like that potentially here in Bristol too?
We've got a generation, we've got a section of the community here in Bristol who have total animosity towards the police. It was funny. It is interesting with regards to the Tesco's riots, because on the first night it was a kind of a tangible kind of political, more politically motivated. By the time the second event started to happen, there was also this issue of confrontation with the police of venting of local disenfranchised local youths from the community. And I think that exists in Tottenham, it exists in Manchester, it exists in Bristol. It's you know.
So why don't they trust the police? Why is there animosity?
Okay, right. My views, who knows, right? But it's not about the police. It's not about the police. The police are the maintenance of a system, of a status quo. We live in a status quo, and the police are the enforcers and the maintenance of that status quo. So for those youths, if the status quo isn't working for them, and if they choose to confront the status quo in any way whatsoever, then it's the police that they come up against. It's as simple as that.
It's called the law, isn't it? If they want to steal something, then the police may feel their collar.
Or protest.
It's called the law, but the law, you know, the law is laws change over time, and laws are subjected to circumstances and situations. And
well, certainly laws over whether you're allowed to wear a balaclava and things like that seem to be changing quite quickly.
But
why the mistrust? Do you think this is just because the young people just feel that the system is against them somehow?
It's not just young people. It's not just young people that feel that. I think within that question you've just asked me is a really key word, and that is feel. From my understanding, those young people are acting on the way they feel. They feel a certain way. Now they're articulate in their own language, in their own communities, but in terms of expressing themselves to the greater society, they're not articulate, they're not necessarily educated, they're not necessarily equipped and able to express the way they feel or fully understand the way they feel, but they feel a certain way, and what they're doing is they're allowing the way they feel to let them act. They're acting upon the way they feel, and then within those actions are coming out with behaviours that people find so easy to condemn and are horrified by, and so on and so forth.
Well, of course, if it involves arson and involves looting from a local shopkeeper, the people are going to condemn it. What's your solution, Alex? You're just someone that happens to live on Brookstock Road. What would you like to see change to make safer?
I believe in massive fundamental changes to the nature of the society we live in, and the what's happening at the moment is a reflection of the fact that there is something fundamentally wrong at the bottom of society.
So what would you tweak? What would you like to tweak if you had the power to do it?
Well, I'd start with the royal family. They can go, and I'd like to see somebody from Brigstock Road have the ability to be the head of state of this country at some time, not just because they happen to be born
forward.
What I'm saying is there's this ethic in this country that if you work hard that you can be born into a wealthy family, go to a public school and a top university. Well, it doesn't matter how hard you work, you're not going to be born into that that family, and you know, it's like, and so something is fundamentally wrong. We look at the money that footballers earn, and you look at the bankers, and you look at what's happening in the banking sector. You look at the MPs fiddling their expenses. You look at the police taking backhanders in the from Rupert Murdoch and his lot, and you know, there's so much going on that and these kids think, well, you lot are all taking a mickey. Like, you know, how can you possibly, you know, we look at the people that are dying in the Pakistan tribal regions with drone attacks. I mean, are we all filthy scum because we it suits us that these families are being blown to death? We don't call ourselves filthy scum, do we? But like, suddenly, because they have a bit of collateral damage, you know, so basically, there's going to be a lot more trouble as far as I can see, and it isn't going to go away. And it's a bit like in Japan, you don't build a building without putting in earthquake protection in the building. There's no point. And at the moment, we're building this lovely, pretty society, but there's no earthquake protection in the bottom of it. And you know, and it is going to go wrong. And these kids are doing us a massive favour because they are telling us that we need to make some fundamental changes.
Martin, do you think there's actually any chance of real fundamental change, like, yes, Alex is calling for?
Yes, I think the crisis, particularly in the banking system, is the worst we've ever seen, ever, really. And this is the opportunity to get those changes through, which should have happened years ago.
Yeah, well, it's not going to happen with the Tories, is it?
No, it's not, this is where politics comes in. We want, I mean, look at the Northern Ireland struggle over 30 years. We don't necessarily want to go to civil war either, do we?
No.
We want it resolved through dialogue, and that means everybody saying what they really mean and meaning what they say, and finding a way through dialogue. But that's going to be a hard dialogue because basically the people at the top have been stealing from the rest of the society for a very long time, and they get used to the idea that they're allowed to. They've got to get used to the idea that they're not going to be allowed to.
Okay, well,
that's going to be a tough one.
Okay, Martin and Alex Hutchings, thanks ever so much for your point of view. We're going to have some music now. And next, Will Stinton. He's also from around the Stokes Croft area. I mean, I'm not sure exactly where Will is, but he was certainly down having a look and seeing what was going on during the Easter disturbances. So we'll have a chat to him after some music.
Hi, my name's Next Gen Man, I'm back. I'm the one who did the Andrew Lansley rap. Yeah, I hammered him, back with a bang again. Now I'm gonna take out the main man, Cameron. MC rapping, MP attacking. I'm not political, but I stand up for the man them. And these rap attacks are not random. I'm just sick of these condemned. The one that cut the lower class like sandwiches and still give the bonuses to the bankers. They're pulling the poor down like anchors. I'm angered, taking us out is their answer. They're all actors in front of the cameras. They're trying to kill us off, they're the public's cancer. Act faster, be a Jedi. Take out Cameron, the dark side master. The rich people's cash gets greater. The public services go for the cheese grater. When I get millionaire neighbours, I'm still gonna vote for Labour. Just open your eyes and look, we're gonna be stuck in a rut if they make these cuts. The public sector faces depression, but not the sector that caused the recession. Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts. Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts. Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts. The banks mocked it up, but we've been left to pick the pieces up. Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts. Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts. Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts. Cameron, Clegg and Osborne, they just don't give a oh.
Welcome to the big society. They want fewer 999 operators, bin men, ambulance drivers, paramedics, dinner ladies, lifeguards, nurses, hospital porters, youth workers, teaching assistants. The list goes on. Look.
City pay in a year has risen to 7%, but the fairness is missing. So they're taking dinner ladies out the kitchen and getting rid of all the teaching assistants. I represent the next generation, so I can speak to all the kids, so listen. Bad things are happening to the nation. It's because of the Common Coalition. Yeah, I know politics is boring. You're probably gonna start yawning and then snoring. Cameron and Clegg are in charge, cause the young people see politics and ignore it. They wanna charge 9 grand to the students. You're gonna need a rich mommy to do this. And at EMA, you're gonna lose it. The one to call Chorley Maternity Unit. You should give a top. This is frightening. Barclays boss, his name's Bob Diamond. This year got a 6 million bonus. The cuts are gonna make some people homeless. Cameron and Clegg, where's your heart? Sure, starting the poor parts are gonna get cut hard. The rich are gonna live like stars. The working class, they're gonna get parred.
Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts. Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts. Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts. The banks mocked it up, but we've been left to pick the pieces up. Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts. Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts. Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts. Cameron, Clegg and Osborne, they just don't give a oh. Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts. Everybody stand up if you're against the cuts.
Everybody stand up if you're against the cost. The banks mocked it up, but we've been left to pick the pieces up. Everybody stand up if you're against the cost. Everybody stand up if you're against the cost.
MC Next Gen there, he's the chappie that came out with the Andrew Lansley rap a little bit earlier on in the year, and that's his latest one, Everybody Stand Up If You're Against the Cuts. Now on to talking about Stokes Croft again, and I'm joined now by Will Stinton. And Will, can you just, you were living around about the Ashley Road area at Easter time when these riots stroke disturbances were taking place. Can you just tell us what your experience was of the second of the two nights?
Yeah, I was in the Pipe and Slippers opposite the Telegraphic Heights building, and there was a party going on outside which seemed to be very well behaved, and it was a bit jolly. It was a long bank holiday weekend, sunny, so people were out in the streets and drinking, and suddenly at about, it must have been about 11 o'clock in the evening, I can't remember the exact time because it's a few months ago, horses and followed by stormtroopers and dogs come charging down the road and dispersed everybody out into...
So were you actually stood on the pavement?
No, I was actually in the pub, the actual Pipe and Slippers, if anyone knows it. It's got a little sort of like a bus stop thing outside the pub.
It's right on the junction of Ashley Road and Stokes Croft.
That's correct, yeah. Which is almost directly opposite the Telegraph Heights building. And so there didn't seem to be any trouble at all until the police come charging down the road with horses and their stormtrooper uniforms and dogs, and dispersed people into St Paul's. I think the gentleman was saying they seemed to protect the more affluent areas up the hill. They barricaded the roads off. And I was actually the pub closed and I tried to leave, and the police wouldn't let me out of that particular area.
Well, surely you've got to be able to go either down Stokes Croft or up Stokes Croft.
No,
otherwise you're trapped on the pavement there.
I was completely trapped in the area. They basically had the road closed off from the Colson Girls' Schools right down.
That's just a bit up Stokes
Croft.
That's
further up, yeah, up past the next junction and about halfway up. And they basically they had a line of police from the girls' school all the way down to about halfway down Stokes Croft into town. And we got stuck in the area. The pub was closed because of what was going on in the area. And we tried to leave. We went up to the police. We asked if we can go through to go home, and the police wouldn't let us out.
Now, I better remind you, I did actually talk to the Avon and Somerset Police Press Office three times this week and invite them to put their point of view, either on the phone or in person, but they didn't return any of my calls. Martin, this whole idea of trapping people, like Will was trapped, and you couldn't go up Stokes Croft, you couldn't go down Stokes Croft. This sounds like a sort of mini kettle almost.
Well, it does. I mean, I just hear what the people who were there tell me. I mean, I wasn't there, so I'm not going to make any presumptions about what happened or didn't happen, which I didn't see myself. But I've heard a lot of reports from people about both nights of disturbances, if we can call them that. I mean, in many ways, I think they were rather different from what we've seen in the last week, because it was very much the police who were in the driving seat on both occasions
at Easter.
Whereas I think what's happened in the last week in Bristol is very regrettable copycat behaviour by a minority of people, but we're talking about large numbers of ordinary people being caught up in a police operation which seems to be utterly misconceived on both nights.
Will, can you just tell us what happened? What has things developed that evening?
Yeah, well, we tried to get out, and we asked the police if we could leave, and they said no, and said, look, you know, this is 12 o'clock at night, we want to go home, you know. Or let's go to the shop so we can maybe get a beer and go home or whatever. And we refused, and we were battered back in the end.
Back to where? Because
we were just pushed back into that area. They just wouldn't let us go through. You know, obviously we'd had a few drinks by then, so we might not have been the nicest people to the police. And you know, we apologise for that, but we did try to get out, be nice to them, and try to say we want to go home. You know, what do you want us to do? To sit on the streets and we'll cause more trouble here? You know. And it ended up in a bit of a fracas with the police and, you know, a few injuries. Nothing. No, I didn't get injured.
Did you actually want to go home past the Tesco's? Because I imagine the police wouldn't want you to go that way, would they?
That was the area that was open for us to be in, and we could have walked around that area as much as we liked, you know. But we couldn't go out of that area. There was no way to get into any domestic area.
So are you saying that the area of Stokes Croft, which is where the Tesco's is, was sealed off at both ends then?
Yeah, both ends. And there was people in pubs and in restaurants, and none of us had anywhere to go. I know a couple of people were chased down a lane and hit by the police. Five girls, actually, by some police, charged them down a lane. You know, just thinking,
Looking at this from the police's point of view, it's quite difficult to do this without the police here, but you can imagine that if there's been potentially people involved in preparing petrol bombs in that area, they may wish to make sure that nobody actually runs out of the area, gets away from the area until they're certain that they've got all the people that they want to get for that particular potential alleged offence.
I didn't believe there was actually any petrol bombs even mentioned.
The second night, there was no question of those.
It seemed to be more about what was going on outside the squat, and that was, it was a very good-natured party.
Yeah, but I mean, was this a party actually out in the road?
No. There's a big area off the road. There might be people spilling out onto the road a little bit, but you know, it's late at night on a bank holiday, and there was very little traffic about. There was very little. Everyone was out in the streets and enjoying themselves.
Well, okay, Will. So, what exactly? What are your thoughts then about whether this, if in any way, relates to all the trouble we've seen over this week, at the beginning of this week in London? Because that all started last week with the death of Mark Duggan, who was shot by a policeman using a dum-dum bullet, or at least an armed policeman. And that's then caused looting, rioting, that kind of thing in Tottenham, where the police didn't seem to be really there in enough numbers to stop it. That has then led to copycat things going on in other parts of London, particularly bad on Monday night after the initial looting on Saturday night. How do you think that relates to the situation that we have here in Bristol? Because this has got a lot of this has got to do, it seems, with marginalised young people who don't feel that they have a stake in society, and also a slow breakdown of trust with the police.
Well, it's not just the young people feel let down by society, the police, the government, the local council. I think a lot of people in the whole that area, the Tesco's thing, that reportedly 93% of the people didn't want Tesco's there, but the council still put it there. And when you stop listening to the local people and those voices are silenced, they've got no other means of communicating to people, you know, without actually going out there and protesting and shouting and screaming, you know, we want our town back, we want our country back. Yeah, there's been much talk about the bankers and the politicians, and you know, who seem to have gotten away with raping and pillaging and looting and vandalising our country financially. Yeah, but it's the people who get affected the most who seem to get the most trouble.
Yeah. I think that's right. I mean, I think we've got to distinguish between the kind of rioting we've seen this week, where it's very much people with low education, no opportunities, getting a really raw deal from the society, and of course they kick back in a rather unpleasant way. Now, the Stokes Croft business was actually, the protests against Tesco's were very dignified and peaceful until the police escalated to a level which created all sorts of problems, and of course then carried out attacks on local residents, which are clearly criminal attacks. I mean, people have been, we're talking about broken, we're not talking black eyes, we're talking broken bones and serious injuries on local residents. Now, I think the police, if they are honest with themselves, will say that they called that one wrong, that they created more problems by their attitude than were necessary. But of course, in the real world, especially in poor communities, people do need the police. You can't just wave a magic wand and say that everything's fine. The police need to do their job properly, and where they're not doing it properly, they need to be brought to account. And that goes for everybody. That goes for a looter, it goes for a police officer, it goes for a banker. But of course, we all know that the people at the top are not brought to account, and that's one of the things that makes everybody so angry.
Single bank hasn't been brought to charge. One single bank.
Bernie Madoff.
Yes, but what you expect to happen? The Pecora Commission in the 1930s sent hundreds of bankers to prison. The savings and loan scandal in the 1980s, 3,500 people in the United States were sent to prison. That's what you expect to happen after something like this, and it simply hasn't happened. Now, we know that Goldman Sachs was selling derivatives in the front of the house that they were betting against in the back of the house. That is fraud. But nothing. Do you know why they haven't pursued any of these frauds in the US or in Britain? Because they were all doing it. And if they go for one lot, they'll have to go for them all. Now I say go for them all, because that will solve a lot of our problems from a financial point of view, because we just confiscate all the loot.
Will, this second night of disturbances back at Easter was when police called in the riot police to remove a pre-organised peaceful anti-Tesco event in the street. Now, apparently that is... I mean, were you there for that event? Because apparently there was a kind of party organised by a food group who were associated with trying to make sure that Tesco's didn't open because they want local people running local food shops.
Yes, I believe there's people are trying to set up a people's supermarket in the area, and there's been a few things outside Tesco since. There's been
peaceful things.
Oh, very, very peaceful. I think most people, the majority of people, want to keep it peaceful because we all know that violence just brings the military or weapons onto the streets, or
well, if you live in the community, you don't want to smash it up.
But if it looks like it may be closing the Tescos, which actually should have a right to actually be trading there, surely it's inevitable that the police are going to come.
No one has a right to trade anywhere, do they? Why do Tesco's necessarily have a right to trade on Stokes Croft? If the local population don't want something there, why should they have it there?
I think as the law stands, I mean, David Cameron's talking about localism, and you could come to a situation where it could be possible for a local community to say we don't want Tesco's, but as things stand, Tesco's are legally allowed to be there, and the council tried to object, and they haven't got the power. But on the other hand, people have the right peacefully to protest outside Tesco's. That Tesco's have just got to swallow that. Just as they have the right to trade, other people have the right to stand outside with a sign saying don't shop here. Now, these are the rules for everybody. And what's happening here is that people, whether they're police officers whacking somebody with a baton or setting a dog on them, or somebody breaking a window, the rules are the rules. And the same goes for the bankers. The rules are the rules. If it's fraud, it's fraud. And there's a general attitude that other people must obey the law but not me, and that goes right across the society. And we saw where that ended in Northern Ireland, and now they are trying to build a police force in Northern Ireland that's acceptable to all sections of the community. And because they've been to hell and back, people are prepared to make the necessary compromises. Are we going to have to go there before we are prepared to make the necessary compromises? Let's hope not.
Okay, Will, just to sum up, what would you like to see as a sort of solution to these kind of things? You've obviously talked about the situation with Tesco's. You don't think that they should have a right to open there. But what about the wider question about a disaffected youth who seem quite happy to come out on the streets and, you know, do this kind of feral thing of running around and robbing and looting? What would you like to see done?
And murdering.
To put a stop to that?
I think the local community, the community leaders, maybe the spiritual leaders, church leaders, school leaders, need to start communicating with the councillors and the police and actually having a sensible debate about what is really going on. Yeah? Without the council and the police just dismissing it out of hand that it's just a few minority causing trouble just because they want to.
Yeah. Okay, well, lovely. Thanks very much. And now, finally, we're joined by Marina Morris, who has a piece about something to do with Eastern Europe, I think. Is it?
Yes, about Ukraine. Is the trial of Ukrainian former Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko politically motivated? Ukrainian politics is in a serious crisis. The darling of Ukraine's 2004 pro-Western Orange Revolution, and now the charismatic main opposition leader Yulia Tymoshenko, is on trial in a case which many Western observers claim is politically motivated. She is charged with misusing £270 million of state funds while in office by brokering a gas deal with Russia company Gazprom in 2009. Most of the gas which Russia exports to Europe travels through Ukraine. Russian gas shipments to Europe were halted for 2 weeks in February 2009 because of price dispute between the two nations. Mrs. Tymoshenko's deal restored the gas supply both to Ukraine and the European Union. If she is found guilty, she could face up to a decade in jail and would be disqualified from taking part in 2012 parliamentary election and 2015 presidential poll. In a recent interview, Mr. Tymoshenko said, "President Viktor Yanukovych wants to liquidate the opposition and remove me from political arena. He is turning a European country of 47 million people into one giant gulag. Today's Ukraine is comparable to this Soviet Union in 1938, when innocent people were convicted and sometimes sent to their death. Several former cabinet ministers have been targeted in recent investigations. The former interior minister Yuri Lutsenko is in jail, and the economy minister has been granted political asylum in the Czech Republic. President Yanukovych denies any involvement in the opposition's trials. In contrast, despite opposition objections, President Yanukovych last year signed a deal allowing the Russian Black Sea Fleet to remain in Ukraine until 2044. This deal gave Ukraine, which depends on Russia for more than 50% of gas supply, a further 30% discount on its gas price. Yanukovych stated that this deal also repaired badly damaged relations with Russia. The level of trust of the government in the country has decreased. Yesterday, Yanukovych met Russian President Dmitry Medvedev in Sochi to discuss a wide range of political and economical issues dominated by energy, including customs union with Russia. Russia is using the fuel price to lure Ukraine into customs union as Ukraine looks to strengthen economic and political ties with the European Union. Internally, Tymoshenko's case has unified the opposition and strengthened her image as a leader. Externally, the chances of Ukraine forming as an association with the European Union are probably damaged by this trial. In 2001, President Kuchma sent Mrs. Tymoshenko to jail for 42 days before she was exonerated by the Supreme Court. The 50-year-old religious politician Tymoshenko said, "Any normal person would want to run away, but I'm not frightening. I will never give them that pleasure. There is a higher court than President Yanukovych," whilst looking upwards. A recent Ukrainian opinion poll reported that 2/3 of Ukrainians have no political affiliation. They are working hard and looking forward to a better future and preparing to host the 2012 UEFA European Football Championship.
Okay, thanks, Marina. Now, Martin, it seems like there's still in Ukraine a bit of a tug of war going on between one side or the other. Can you just explain to us who's who in this old tug of war?
Well, I think Marina will know better than I who's who. I know a little bit about Ukrainian politics, and I used to work in Eastern Europe as an advisor. I think the situation in Ukraine is very, very hard because they're in the middle between the Russians and the European Union. And there is obviously, they're pulled in two directions. I mean, you're pointing out that the Russians are cutting the price of gas to the Ukraine. The Russians, as you say, are using that as a way of, as a carrot, really, for the Ukraine, aren't they? They could charge the Ukraine the market price, which, of course, would bankrupt the economy. So they've got a hold over the Ukraine because of the
So
the
which gas. Way is it going to go? Ukraine, is it going to go with the Russians?
Well, the problem is that you may end up with a conflict in Ukraine which could drag everybody else in. That's the danger. And, of course, this kind of political trial raises the temperature to the point which could lead to conflict within the Ukraine. Well, hopefully everybody will back off and be sensible.
Okay, Martin, thank you. That's all for this week. Coming up next, Sky News at 7. Thanks very much to our guests in the first hour, Lib Dem Councillor for Ashley, John Rogers. Also in the second hour to Will Stinton and Alex Hutchings. Not forgetting Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers, and you just heard Marina Morris. You can find us on the internet at thisweek.org.uk or go to the BCFM website, that is bcfm.org.uk.